He yawned. I think I will try not sleep. Wake me if we're about to die. He rolled himself up in the shadow skin and shut his eyes. The ground was stony and cold, but after a time Tyrion Lannister did sleep. He dreamt of the Sky Cell. This time he was the jailer, not the prisoner. Big, with a strap in his hand, and he was hitting his father, driving him back towards the abyss. Tyrion? Bronn's warning was low and urgent. Tyrion was awake in the blink of an eye. The fire had burned down to embers, and the shadows were creeping in all round them. Bronn had raised himself to one knee, his sword in one hand and his dirk in the other. Tyrion held up a hand. Stay still, it said. Come, shed our fire. The night is cold, he called out to the creeping shadows. I fear we've no wine to offer you, but you're welcome to some of our goat. All movement stopped. Tyrion saw the glint of moonlight on metal. Our mountain, a voice called out from the trees, deep and hard and unfriendly. Our goat. Your goat, Tyrion agreed. Who are you? When you meet your guards, a different voice replied, say it was Gunther, son of Gurn of the Stone Crows, who sent you to them. A branch cracked underfoot as he stepped into the light, a thin man with a horned helmet, armed with a long knife. I'm Shagger, son of Dolf. That was the first voice, deep and deadly. A boulder shifted to their left and stood and became a man. Massive and slow and strong he seemed, dressed all in skins, with a club in his right hand and an axe in his left. He smashed them together as he lumbered closer. Other voices called other names, Conn and Torrick and Jagat, and more that Tyrion forgot the instant he heard them, 10 at least. A few had swords and knives, others brandished pitchforks and scythes and wooden spears. He waited until they'd done shouting out their names before he gave them an answer. I am Tyrion, son of Tywin of the Clan Lannister, the Lions of the Rock. We will gladly pay you for the goat we ate. What have you got to give us, Tyrion, son of Tywin? Asked the one who named himself Gunther, who seemed to be their chief. There is silver in my purse, Tyrion told them. This hauberk I wear is large for me, but it should fit Conn nicely, and the battle axe I carry would suit Shaggy's mighty hand far better than the wood axe he holds. The half-man would pay us with our own coin, said Conn. Conn speaks truly, Gunther said. Your silver's ours, your horses are ours, your hauberk, and your battle axe, and the knife at your belt, these are ours too. You have nothing to give us but your lives. How would you like to die, Tyrion, son of Tywin? In my own bed, with a belly full of wine and a maiden's mouth around my cock at the age of 80, he replied. The huge one, Shagger, laughed first and loudest. The others seemed less amused. Conn, take their horses, Gunther commanded. Kill the other and seize the half-man. He can milk the goats and make the mothers laugh. Bronn sprang to his feet. Who dies first? No, Tyrion said sharply. Gunther, son of Gurn, hear me. My house is rich and powerful. If the Stone Crows will see us safely through these mountains, my lord father will shower you with gold. The gold of a lowland lord is as worthless as a half-man's promises, Gunther said. Half a man I may be, Tyrion said, yet I have the courage to face my enemies. What do the Stone Crows do but hide behind rocks and shiver with fear as the Knights of the Vale ride by? Shagger gave a roar of anger and clashed club against axe. Jagat poked at Tyrion's face with the far-hardened point of a long wooden spear. He did his best not to flinch. Are these the best weapons you could steal? He said.
Good enough for killing sheep, perhaps, if the sheep do not fight back. My father's smiths shit better steel.
Our little boy man, Shagger replied, will you mock my axe after I chop off your manhood and feed it to the goats?
But Gunther raised a hand.
No, I would hear his words. The mothers go hungry, and steel fills more mouths than gold. What would you give us for your lives, Tyrion, son of Tywin? Swords? Lances? Mail?
All that, and more, Gunther, son of Gurn, Tyrion Lannister replied, smiling. I will give you the Vale of Arryn.
Eddard. Through the high, narrow windows of the Red Keep's cavernous throne room, the light of sunset spilled across the floor, laying dark red stripes upon the walls where the heads of dragons had once hung. Now the stone was covered with hunting tapestries, vivid with greens and browns and blues, and yet it still seemed to Ned Stark that the only color in the hall was the red of blood. He sat high upon the immensely ancient seat of Aegon the Conqueror, an ironwork monstrosity of spikes and jagged edges and grotesquely twisted metal. It was, as Robert had warned him, a hellishly uncomfortable chair, and never more so than now, with his shattered leg throbbing more sharply every minute. The metal beneath him had grown harder by the hour, and the fanged steel behind made it impossible to lean back. A king should never sit easy, Aegon the Conqueror had said, when he commanded his armourers to forge a great seat from swords laid down by his enemies.
Damn Aegon for his arrogance, Ned thought solemnly, and damn Robert, and his hunting as well.
You are quite certain these were more than brigands, Varys asked softly from the council table beneath the throne.
Grandmaster Pycelle stirred uneasily beside him, while Littlefinger toyed with a pen. They were the only councillors in attendance. A white hart had been sighted in the Kingswood, and Lord Renly and Sir Barristan had joined the king to hunt it, along with Prince Joffrey, Sandor Clegane, Balin Swan, and half the court. So Ned must needs sit the Iron Throne in his absence. At least he could sit. Save the council, the rest must stand respectfully or kneel. The petitioners clustered near the tall doors, the knights and high lords and ladies beneath the tapestries, the small folk in the gallery, the male guards in their cloaks, gold or grey, all stood. The villagers were kneeling, men, women and children, alike tattered and bloody, their faces drawn by fear. The three knights who had brought them here to bear witness stood behind them.
Brigands, Lord Varys. Sir Raymond Darry's voice dripped scorn. Oh, they were brigands beyond a doubt. Lannister brigands.
Ned could feel the unease in the hall, as high lords and servants alike strained to listen. He could not pretend to surprise. The West had been a tinderbox since Catelyn had seized Tyrion Lannister. Both Riverrun and Castle Rock had called their banners, and armies were massing in the pass below the Golden Tooth. It had only been a matter of time until the blood began to flow. The sole question that remained was how best to staunch the wound. Sad-eyed, Sir Carol Vance, who would have been handsome but for the wine-stained birthmark that discolored his face, gestured at the kneeling villagers.
This is all that remains of the whole house of Shearer, Lord Eddard. The rest are dead, along with the people of Wendish Town and the Mummer's Ford.
Rise, Ned commanded the villagers. He never trusted what a man told him from his knees. All of you, up!
In ones and twos, the whole house of Shearer struggled to its feet. One ancient needed to be helped, and a young girl in a bloody dress stayed on her knees, staring blankly at Sir Aerys Oakheart, who stood by the foot of the throne in the white armour of the King's Guard, ready to protect and defend the King. or Ned supposed the king's hand. Joss, Sir Raymond Darry said to a plump, balding man in a brewer's apron, tell the hand what happened at Shearer. Joss nodded.
If it please his grace.
His grace is hunting across the Blackwater, Ned said, wondering how a man could live his whole life a few days' ride from the Red Keep and still have no notion what his king looked like. Ned was clad in a white linen doublet with a direwolf of Stark on the breast. His black wool cloak was fastened at the collar by the silver hand of office. Black and white and grey, all the shades of truth. I am Lord Eddard Stark, the king's hand. Tell me who you are and what you know of these raiders.
I capped an alehouse, my lord, in Shearer, by the stone bridge. The finest ale south of the neck. Everyone said so, begging your pardons, my lord. It's gone now, like all the rest, my lord. They come and drank their fill and spilled the rest before they fired my roof. And they would have spilled my blood, too, if they caught me, my lord.
They burnt us out, a farmer beside him said. Come riding in the dark, up from the south, and fired the fields and the houses alike. Killing them is trying to stop them. There weren't no raiders, though, my lord. They had no mind to steal our stock, not these. They butchered my milk cow where she stood, and left her for the flies and the crows.
They rode down my prentice boy, said a squat man, with a smith's muscles and a bandage around his head.
He had put on his finest clothes to come to court, but his breeches were patched, his cloak travel-stained and dusty.
Chased him back and forth across the fields on their horses, poking at him with their lances like it was a game, them laughing and the boys tumbling and screaming till the big one pierced him clean through.
The girl on her knees craned her head up at Ned, high above her on the throne.
They killed my mother too, your grace, and they...
Her voice trailed off, as if she had forgotten what she was about to say. She began to sob. Sir Raymond Darry took up the tale.
At Wendisham, the people sought shelter in their holdfast, but the walls were timbered. The raiders piled straw against the wood and burnt them all alive. When the Wendish folk opened their gates to flee the fire, they shot them down with arrows as they came running out, even women with suckling babes.
Oh, dreadful, murmured Varys. How cruel can men be?
They would have done the same for us, but the Shearer holdfast made of stone, Joss said. Some wanted to smoke us out, but the big one said there was riper fruit upriver, and they made for the Mummer's Ford.
Ned could feel cold steel against his fingers as he leaned forward. Between each finger was a blade, the points of twisted swords, fanning out like talons from the arms of the throne. Even after 3 centuries, some were still sharp enough to cut. The Iron Throne was full of traps for the unwary. The song said it had taken 1,000 blades to make it, heated white-hot, in the furnace breath of Beleriand the Black Dread. The hammering had taken 59 days. The end of it was this hunchback beast, made of razor edges and barbs and ribbons of sharp metal. A chair that could kill a man, and had, if the stories could be believed. What Eddard Stark was doing sitting there, he would never comprehend. Yet there he sat. And these people looked to him for justice. What proof do you have that these were Lannisters? He asked, trying to keep his fury under control. Did they wear crimson cloaks or fly a lion banner?
Even Lannisters are not so blind stupid as that, Sir Mark Piper snapped. He was a swaggering bantam rooster of a youth, too young and too hot-blooded for Ned's taste, though a fast friend of Catelyn's brother, Edmure Tully.
Every man among them was mounted and mailed, my lord, Sir Carol answered calmly. They were armed with steel-tipped lances and longswords, with battle-axes for the butchery. He gestured toward one of the ragged survivors. You, yes, you, no one's going to hurt you. Tell the hand what you told me. The old man bobbed his head.
Concerning their horses, he said, it were war horses they rode. Many a year I walked in old Sir Willem's stables, so I knows the difference. Not a one of these ever pulled a plough. God's bear witness if I'm wrong.
Well mounted, brigands, observed Littlefinger. Perhaps they stole the horses from the last place they raided. How many men were there in this raiding party? Ned asked. 100 at the least, Joss answered. In the same instant, as the bandit smith said, 50. And the grandmother behind him?
Onards and onards, my lord, an army there was.
You are more right than you know, good woman, Lord Eddard told her. You say they flew no banners. What of the armour they wore? Did any of you note ornaments or decorations, devices on shields or helm? The brewer, Joss, shook his head.
It grieves me, my lord, but no. The armour they showed us was plain, only the one who led them. He was armoured like the rest, but there was no mistaking him all the same. It was the size of him, my lord. Those as say the giants are all dead never saw this one, I swear. Big as an ox he was, and a voice like stone-breaking.
The mountain, Sir Mark said loudly. Can any man doubt it? This was Gregor Clegane's work.
Ned heard muttering from beneath the windows and the far end of the hall. Even in the galley, nervous whispers were exchanged. High lords and small folk alike knew what it could mean if Sir Mark was proved right. Sir Gregor Clegane stood bannerman to Lord Tywin Lannister. He studied the frightened faces of the villagers. Small wonder they had been so fearful. They had thought they were being dragged here to name Lord Tywin a red-handed butcher before a king who was his son by marriage. He wondered if the knights had given them a choice. Grand Maester Pycelle rose ponderously from the council table, his chain of office clinking.
Sir Mark, with respect, you cannot know that this outlaw was Sir Gregor. There are many large men in the realm.
As large as the mountain that rides, Sir Carol said. I've never met one.
Nor has any man here, Sir Raymond added hotly. Even his brother is a pup beside him. My lords, open your eyes. Do you need to see his seal on the corpses? This was Gregor.
Why should Sir Gregor turn brigand? Pycelle asked. By the grace of his liege lord, he holds a stout keep and lands of his own. The man is an anointed knight.
A false knight, Sir Mark said. Lord Tywin's mad dog.
My lord hand, Pycelle declared in a stiff voice, I urge you to remind this good knight that Lord Tywin Lannister is the father of our own gracious queen.
Thank you, Grand Maester Pycelle, Ned said. I fear we might have forgotten that if you hadn't pointed it out. From his vantage point at the top of the throne, he could see men slipping out the door at the far end of the hall. Hares going to ground, he supposed, or rats off to nibble the queen's cheese. He caught a glimpse of Septa Mordane in the gallery, with his daughter Sansa behind her. Ned felt a flash of anger. This was no place for a girl. But the Septa could not have known that today's court would be anything but the usual tedious business of hearing petitions, settling disputes between rival holdfasts, and adjudicating the placement of boundary stones. At the council table below, Petire Baelish lost interest in his quill and leaned forward.
Sir Mark, Sir Carl, Sir Raymond, perhaps I might ask you a question. These holdfasts were under your protection. Where were you when all this slaughtering and burning was going on?
Sir Carl Vance answered, I was attending my lord father in the pass below the Golden Tooth, as was Sir Mark. When the word of these outrages reached Sir Edmure Tully, he sent word that we should take a small force of men to find what survivors we could and bring them to the king. Sir Raymond Darry spoke up.
Sir Edmure had summoned me to River Run with all my strength. I was camped across the river from his walls, awaiting his commands, when the word reached me. By the time I could return to my own lands, Clegane and his vermin were back across the Red Fork, riding for Lannister's hills.
Littlefinger stroked the point of his beard thoughtfully. And if they come again, sir?
If they come again, we'll use their blood to water the fields they burnt, Sir Mark Piper declared hotly. Sir Edmure has sent men to every village and holdfast within a day's ride of the border, Sir Carol explained. The next raider will not have such an easy time of it.
And that may be precisely what Lord Tywin wants, Ned thought to himself, to bleed off strength from River Run, goad the boy into scattering his swords. His wife's brother was young, and more gallant than wise. He would try to hold every inch of his soil to defend every man, woman, and child who named him lord. And Tywin Lannister was shrewd enough to know that.
If your fields and hellfars are safe from harm, Lord Petar was saying, what then do you ask of the throne?
The lords of the tyrant keep the king's peace, Sir Raymond Derry said. The Lannisters have broken it. We ask leave to answer them steel for steel. We ask justice for the small folk of Shearer and Windishtown and the Mummer's Ford.
Edmure agrees we must pay Gregor Clegane back his bloody coin, Sir Mark declared. But old Lord Hoster command us to come here and beg the king's leave before we strike.
Thank the gods for old Lord Hoster, then. Tywin Lannister was as much fox as lion. If indeed he sent Sir Gregor to burn and pillage, and Ned did not doubt that he had, he'd taken care to see that he rode under cover of night, without banners, in the guise of a common brigand. Should River Run strike back, Cersei and her father would insist that it had been the Tullys who broke the king's peace, not the Lannisters. The guards only knew what Robert would believe. Grand Maester Pycelle was on his feet again.
My Lord Hand, if these good folk believe that Sir Gregor has forsaken his holy vows for plunder and rape, let them go to his liege lord and make their complaint. These crimes are no concern of the throne. Let them seek Lord Tywin's justice.
It is all the king's justice, Ned told him, north, south, east, or west. All we do in Robert's name.
The king's justice, Grandmaster Pycelle said. So it is, and we should defer this matter until the king...
The king is hunting across the river and may not return for days, Lord Eddard said. Robert bid me to sit here in his place, to listen with his ears and to speak with his voice. I mean to do just that. Though I agree he must be told. He saw a familiar face beneath the tapestry. Sir Robert Royce stepped forward and bowed. My lord? Your father is hunting with the king, Ned said. Will you bring them word of what was said and done here today?
At once, my lord. Do we have your leave to take our vengeance against Sir Gregor, then?
Mark Piper asked the throne.
Vengeance, Ned said.
I thought we were speaking of justice. Burning Clegane's fields and slaughtering his people will not restore the king's peace, only your injured pride. He glanced away before the young knight could voice his outraged protest and address the villagers. People of Shearer, I cannot give you back your homes or your crops, nor can I restore your dead to life. But perhaps I can give you some small measure of justice in the name of our king, Robert. Every eye in the hall was fixed on him, waiting. Slowly, Ned struggled to his feet, pushing himself up from the throne with the strength of his arms, his shattered leg screaming inside its cast. He did his best to ignore the pain. It was no moment to let them see his weakness.